Uber's president is leaving the controversy-laden company. Drake sets streaming records on Apple Music and Spotify. Samsung's Siri rival, Bixby, is nearly ready to talk. And Google is apologizing for YouTube flubs. All that and a whole lot more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1728, recorded Monday, March 20th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you every last thing you need to know about technology. Every last thing. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Nathan Olivares Giles, and we've got some breaking news.
Breaking news.
Some breaking news. It's related to Drake. The rapper actually set a new record, two new records for More Life, the album that he dropped on Saturday, on both Apple Music and Spotify. He set 24-hour records, and on Apple Music, More Life was streamed more than 89.9 million times. On Spotify, it was streamed 61.3 million times. This is all within the first 24 hours. The album dropped on both apps on Saturday, and this is pretty interesting stuff. One of the things that sticks out is they don't even have that many paying users on either service. In December, Apple said that it had about 20 million paid users, and at that time, Spotify said it had about 30 million paid users. So people are using the free tier, or maybe they're trying out the service for the first time. But what do you think of this? These are massive numbers, right?
Yeah, this is a lot of people. And we were trying to think, okay, well, if people were using it on the app, they were like, can you just open a bunch of iTunes account, like a bunch of Apple IDs? And I think that would be much harder than just downloading it on the free tier. And I'm also wondering, we talked last week about how Spotify is sort of changing to, they're going to, in the future, in the not so distant future, just allow paid subscribers to download certain albums. But this Drake got in at the last minute, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like a real kind of advantageous moment to release an album before some of those changes come down the pipe. And I guess it speaks to really just the continual upward trajectory for streaming overall, right? If you did, not want to set up a second iTunes account and you don't want, you've already used your free trial, paying $10 just to listen to this album would still be cheaper than going and buying like a $15 CD from Best Buy or something. So, streaming is pretty mainstream now. I guess this speaks to that. Sales records back in the day during the height of hip hop on CDs and things like this was maybe you'd go platinum in week one. And that was selling like a million records. So this is much more than that. But I do wonder how many of those people actually finished the album. I must have listened to this record maybe five or six times this weekend. For the most part, I like it. It has kind of more of a dance hall vibe. It's very poppy. So if you're not like a huge rap fan, but you like R&B stuff, this might be for you. That's a massive, massive number. And I got to wonder how many people actually sat through an hour and a half worth of Drake's new stuff.
Yeah. So you said you listened to it a bunch of times. Was maybe you listened to it like 80.9 million times?
I'm juicing up the numbers. Yeah. Totally possible. Totally possible. Yeah.
Because that's the thing. It's right. Like if you listen to it 20 times, that adds to the number of streams.
It does. I actually listened to this album on the way from San Francisco driving into Petaluma this morning. And I only got to track 13. There's 22 tracks. So, I wasn't able to complete it today, but yeah, I do wonder how many people are repeat listeners here.
I listened to it zero times.
Well, there's still a chance.
I will right after the show. I'm going to listen to it because I feel like you've really filled this hole on the Tech News Today team. I know
on
Friday when there was a hip hop hole, a hip hop sized hole, and you filled it. And aww. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm happy to be that guy. All right. Well, to some other news here. Google wants you to know that it's sorry, really sorry. In the last 2 days, it's issued two apologies for YouTube-related errors. On Sunday, Google's YouTube creators account tweeted an apology for mistakenly filtering out videos uploaded by LGBTQ users. when anyone used a restricted mode on the service. That means that when you're trying to restrict out, you know, mature content, things with cuss words, or maybe you know, risque content, basically what you'd see in an R-rated movie, then you'd actually miss some of these videos from LGBTQ creators. The tweet said, "Sorry for all the confusion with restricted mode. Some videos have been incorrectly labeled, and that's not right. We're on it." The other apology came Monday when Matt Britton, who oversees Google's businesses in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, issued an apology for allowing ads to appear next to offensive and sometimes racist and homophobic content on YouTube in Europe. Britton said, "I would like to apologize to our partners and advertisers who might have been affected by their ads appearing on controversial content." That apology comes after some advertisers said last week that they were willing to pull their ads from Google over this issue. So it seems like Google's doing a lot of apologizing here lately, and I got to wonder, who's to blame? Is it the algorithms? Is it the humans? Is it the executives? Like, what's going on here?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess you could blame the algorithms, but the humans are in charge of the algorithms. So yeah,
and they build the algorithms.
But I mean, even, like, these are two separate issues, but the similar is that this issue of algorithms being wrong so often, and there being so much content that you can't depend on human editors to figure this out. And so the first issue, the restricted mode, I mean, we've seen this in browsers for a long time. Like, you might, you know, I think in the beginning, Google had this problem as well when they would have safe search on. And then suddenly, like, if a kid typed in, like, what does it mean to be gay? Like, that wouldn't come up. And that's an answer that some people really need to know. It's not rated R knowledge. And so they've gotten better over time. And I'm hoping that they will get better over time with this too. And the other issue, putting ads on extremist content, I mean, that is an algorithm problem, but it's a bigger problem just with the way advertising works. And it's so, I mean, they've really disrupted this, like, between Facebook and Google, you know, not with just Google search, but YouTube. They have a duopoly over the advertising business, and they need to do better than this. They need to stop making money off of things like extremist content.
Which, it really seems like we're reaching this kind of tipping point of consciousness that this content is even out there, and that for maybe quite a long time, companies like this have been able to make money off of it, serving ads to next to it, because maybe people weren't paying attention. So, you know, the controversy with PewDiePie, these sorts of controversies really seem to be creating a dialogue around this issue, and hopefully that will provide the motivation necessary to step up the technology answers to these problems, because this is kind of an embarrassing thing to be bumping your head against if you're a Google, you know, one of the biggest tech companies in the world, one of the most tech savvy. And it also follows on the heels of the Beauty and the Beast advertising fiasco, where Google Home was, they say, as a mistake and all that, telling people who are using that voice-controlled speaker that Beauty and the Beast was playing on a Friday. So there seems to be a lot of stumbling here. Hopefully they'll learn from it, but I guess it's kind of a wait-and-see approach as to whether or not they get their act together, right?
Yeah. I mean, I want them to be better already at this. Yeah. Do better.
Do better, Google.
That's what I say. But the other side of this is that the creators, the people that discovered this quickly, they're doing a great job. I mean, that's the thing when I think about, you know, when Facebook was targeting people directly according to their racial identity.
Yes.
And then Politico, I think, no, it was ProPublica, did a piece immediately and uncovered it. And then they fixed it. You know, same thing when Facebook was taking down pictures of the horrors of war, the picture of the girl on fire. And, you know, these things happen quickly because someone notices and someone says this isn't right. And then the company apologizes and tries to change quickly. So
yeah, in the case of the LGBTQ creators here on YouTube, it really seems like it was a lot of them speaking up for themselves and saying, hey, you know, I have a video on, you know, being a lesbian woman, and it's like a daily diary. Like, why is this being filtered out? Or, you know, I have a video on some makeup tips or all these different things that are clearly not explicit content, not mature content, and they're being filtered out. That community essentially spoke up for itself here. And they got a tweeted apology. So, you know, clearly folks do need to speak up for themselves. And it seems like Google is trying to listen, at least.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I do not personally know Jeff Jones, so I do not want to disparage him by calling him a rat, but it is certainly beginning to look like Uber is that proverbial sinking ship, and the rats are getting out as fast as they can. Yesterday, President Jeff Jones announced his departure from the company, the latest top exec to flee the scandal-ridden Uber. Jones was previously a CMO at Target and told Kara Swisher at Recode that the beliefs and approach to leadership that have guided his career are inconsistent with what he saw and experienced at Uber. Now, he was only at the ride-hailing company for 6 months. CEO Travis Kalanick thanked Jones and said he had decided to leave the company as a result of the announcement that Kalanick made last week that he planned to hire a COO. So Kalanick, I guess, didn't either made that statement after or before Jones was saying that, you know, that he was unhappy with the way that Uber was, I guess, doing everything.
Yeah. That is a pretty damning quote as you're leaving a job. I mean, just to say that, you know, basically the culture that you're seeing at this company doesn't line up with all the other stuff I've seen over my career. I mean, damn, like you're not worried about burning any bridges there. But it also kind of speaks to a lot of the controversy that we've seen from the company. And I do wonder if this will help take some heat off of Travis as the CEO, or if it's going to put some more on him, because, you know, really, with all of these problems that have been happening, oftentimes when you see companies going through this, the buck does stop with that leadership. And the only person higher than the president is that CEO, is Travis in this case. So, I got to wonder what this is going to mean for him.
I have to wonder who's going to take that COO job. Like, who wants to go to Uber now?
Yeah. And what are they going to do with the president position? Is that going to become like a president CEO job? Mm-hmm. Is the COO effectively going to fill that role? I mean, that's kind of a big title to have open and empty. So pretty fascinating stuff. Mm-hmm.
And Burke has some issues with rat. My disparaging rats. They're cleaner. They have impulse control compared. Oh, you to Travis. Okay, good. Well, yeah, because the rats are leaving. He's still there, apparently.
Well, hey, the captain of the ship should go down with the ship. Isn't that what they say?
Yes. So. Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, Instagram rolled out an update on Monday that allows users to save their own live videos to their phone's camera roll. Twitter's Periscope, Facebook Live, and Google's YouTube have let users do this for a long time now. So Instagram is really catching up with everyone else on this feature. But this is a change in tone for live video. Last November, when live video first came to Instagram, the whole ephemerality was really touted as a feature. Nobody could see the video after the live stream was done. And now you can save your own video, which kind of might change things, offering a permanence at least to one side. So what do you think here? Is this, Instagram kind of pulling back on its ways and maybe just kind of doing a Me Too move? Or does this make sense that if you're live streaming to Instagram, you might actually want to see these things again?
I don't know. There's this dance back and forth between curating our lives and wanting things to disappear. And I think right now, I know Snapchat, and now it sounds like Instagram is really just letting people decide. So it doesn't automatically save. So it's not, it's not there if you don't want it to save, but you can save it, which I guess is the way Snapchat is now. They have the memories feature that you can choose or not choose. And I do like that. And I think that's what people want. I think especially younger people I've noticed who use Snapchat are really like kids who have grown up with their parents saying like, oh, be careful what you put online. Be careful what you put on Facebook, because it'll stay with you when you apply for a job. And when and those people aren't using Facebook at all, but they are using other services, and they do, they quickly realize that, okay, here's a way things can disappear. To me, it's risky, because then that might lead to the behavior of like, I'm going to put anything online because, you know, it's just going to disappear, when we all know that anyone can screenshot it. You know, it doesn't necessarily disappear. You know, so it's, I think it's probably good. I don't do a lot of live streaming on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I think the other issue with this is, I think with Snapchat and Instagram, the live streaming or the stories, it's a lot of the boring stuff of people's lives.
Well, that's one of my biggest problems with what I see on Facebook and Instagram to a certain extent too, is these live stream videos. They're just things that I wouldn't normally want to watch. And you kind of tune into them because maybe it's someone you follow who you do like or you're interested in. And hey, it's live. It's happening right now. Let's check it out. But I find myself tuning out pretty quick. I do wonder, though, because really Instagram's kind of in many ways become a bit of a Snapchat clone. And it makes sense that a younger audience is using Instagram in most cases than Facebook. A lot of teens and preteens. But Facebook really has kind of made a bet with live video, at least in its core app, that this is something you're going to be able to watch after the fact, which is very much like what Periscope and YouTube do. So I wonder if at some point, if Instagram is just going to keep being that Snapchat rival, clone, competitor, whatever you want to call it, or if at some point they'll, you know, kind of toe the company line and say, okay, live video should be this way. You should be able to watch it after the fact. We're going to do what Facebook does. But if nothing else, it seems like Instagram is the place where there's a little bit more experimentation, a little bit more of a chance to go back and forth and tweak things and not necessarily have as steadfast of an approach, which I guess would kind of make sense given that it's at least a smaller app and a smaller audience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about just general live streaming. And I say that as someone who's currently live streaming right now. But, you know, just I like the idea of people having the ability if they're in a situation like citizen journalism, those sorts of things. But just the idea that everyone should or could just live stream any boring thing that they're doing, that makes me just worry about our future.
Like, yeah.
You're just growing up and, you know, in a world where, you know, it's just a regular thing to say like, hey, you know, I'm just tying my shoes and eating pizza.
Yeah.
Whereas that's very different than I'm all for like, you know, video chatting.
Yeah.
Where you're not just live streaming, where you're not like suddenly you're an average person being a content creator.
Yeah.
I like the idea of being able to, you know, for people to be able to talk to each other in video, but that's very different. And I think we blend those a lot.
Yeah, we definitely do. It's kind of a trip. I mean, you remember when the Truman Show first came out? Mm-hmm. It was such a crazy idea. Like, who would, you know, even want to have their entire show be a life? And this guy didn't know. And now people do that willingly. So it's kind of a fascinating, well, it's somewhat democratizing that the tech is available so widespread and so many different apps and so many people have access to it. But clearly there's a time and a place when it makes sense. And maybe tying your shoe might not be that.
Unless you're really good at it.
Yeah.
Well, the much-anticipated Bixby personal assistant is here, but you can only use it on a Samsung device. It's not even actually here. It's almost here. According to Samsung, Bixby is a different kind of assistant. They prefer the name agent, like a spy. They probably wouldn't like us to call it a spy.
Probably
don't like that now. According to the press release, Bixby is context-aware, so it knows where you are and what you might want from that particular interaction you're having with it. It'll release next week with the new flagship Samsung Galaxy S8, and it will work with pre-installed apps, and then soon the company says they'll release an SDK. Leo and I talked a little bit about this on iOS Today earlier, and I liked that it was, they called it, what was it? It was context tolerable. I can't remember the word that it, you know, cognitively tolerant.
Oh,
which,
what the hell does that mean?
You guys should need to be cognitively tolerant with me sometimes, which means understand what I'm saying when my words don't exactly come out the way they should. But from an assistant, it's like, you know, with Siri, you have to say, read my text messages or read my messages. You have to say things very specifically. But what Samsung is promising is that you can say things anyway, like the way I randomly
say
things.
So better natural language processing, basically.
Exactly.
I wish they would just say that. You have to really come up with some silly little turn of phrase. It's just like, yeah, you can talk to like a regular person rather than, you know, cognitively tolerable. What the, it's just, I don't know. I mean, like, I remember S Voice, which showed up on the Galaxy S3, mm-hmm. Galaxy S4,
mm-hmm.
and that sucked. I mean, it was atrocious. And whenever I think of what Samsung does with software, really outside of the Gear VR, which is mostly Oculus-powered software, it largely isn't great. It isn't really a great experience for me, and this is my opinion here. But this is clearly something that you expect on a phone these days. You know, you expect to be able to talk to your Android using the Google Assistant. You expect that Siri is going to be there. Alexa has really popularized the idea of voice assistants. So I find it curious that Samsung feels like they need to build this out rather than just rely on Google for this sort of situation. But it sounds great. Like having that contextual awareness and having that natural language so you can just speak to it like a regular person. I mean, that could be game changing if they nail it. But, you know, I don't know if I trust Samsung to do that. So I can't wait to try it out. I'd love to be wrong here. It's really kind of fascinating that they're trying to come out with this and see if they can actually differentiate it. Because really, all the assistants are pretty similar, and they're all pretty dumb in many ways.
Yes, they are, you know? Smart assistants. Well, so they're not building it from scratch, right? They bought the company, and I can't remember, but it was the guys who started Siri.
Yes, that's
too.
Right.
So, and she had another name, and I don't know. It's interesting that they've given this one a male name.
Yeah.
Although, I guess Bixby could be gender neutral.
It might be gender neutral. I mean, you can make Siri's voice male or female. Right. I think you can do the same with Alexa. I'm not sure if you can do that with Google's assistant. I've never tried.
Yeah. And I don't think you can do it with Amazon Echo either. I think she has one voice.
Yes.
And that's it.
Yes.
But yeah, I think they are, most of the assistants are not so smart, and they're not so smart in totally different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, to a certain extent, I guess maybe I'm being a bit harsh on these things. You know, in order to get smarter, you have to talk to them more. They have to be used. That's the only way that they can change and improve, right? So it is still early days in the total grand scheme of things for voice-controlled assistants. And I guess, you know, one more competitor can't necessarily be a bad thing. I do wonder how they come up with these names, though. I mean, Bixby's pretty unique. And I know with, at least with, as Burke just mentioned, Bill Bixby was played David Banner in the Hulk TV series, which I was just watching reruns of that off of iTunes like 3 months ago. It doesn't hold up as well as I thought it would.
Yeah. Did you watch it when it was a kid? When you were a kid,
I
feel like that.
Oh yeah, I totally did. I used to love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Bixby sounds like Jeeves or something, like a British assistant.
I guess it does kind of have that feel to it. Yeah. Interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. What a focus group to sit on that would be.
Yes.
Right on. Well, could augmented reality be Apple's next big hit? Could it someday be bigger than the iPhone? Bloomberg's Mark Gurman has a detailed report that says Apple has a plan to roll out augmented reality glasses and AR camera-equipped iPhones over the next 3 to 5 years. Bloomberg says that AR, and not self-driving cars or the Apple Watch, is being pegged inside of the company as the next iPhone-level revenue generator. Apple, as you might have expected, declined to comment on this story. It's pretty interesting report. Not a super surprise here, but you know, I really do think of Google Glass and HoloLens from Microsoft when reading this, and I wonder if Apple's coming from a behind position. Obviously, no one's really cracked wearable glasses and AR or VR or anything like that. But what do you think about that? Is this a smart move for Apple?
Well, I can't tell if this is really Tim Cook sort of being defensive of saying, like, we're still here. We we're not over yet. Listen to us. And of course, they're not over. People are still buying lots of iPhones, and they will still buy lots of the iPhone 8, whether or not it has some sort of augmented reality built into it. So, I do think that augmented reality might be our future. It's not a future that I necessarily want. Part of Mark Gurman's story talks about how this is eventually will be us not staring at our screen. It'll be putting the screen down, whether we have goggles or whether we have the, you know, little like glass plate in the air where I just go like this and I, you know, see things.
Minority Report style.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I don't know if I would like that. I don't think I would. You know, the idea that you just, a screen would show up in front if I like forgot your name or something, you know, I'm like, oh, thank goodness. I don't want to be any more augmented in that way in my life. So, you know, we'll see, but it is different than Apple usually, because usually they're totally secretive and every rumor that Mark Gurman gets comes from a source, you know, a secretive source inside, where most of this is things that Tim Cook has actually said himself.
Yeah. I mean, Gurman's one of the best Apple beat reporters out there, a scoop machine. So as far as reliability, you can't do much better than that. But I do have to wonder, what Apple's approach to this really could be that could be significantly different than what we've seen already. I mean, I think for a lot of folks, when they think of AR, they might not even realize that it was AR, but Pokemon Go is like one of the most popular AR apps. But then you also think of stuff like Google Glass, which really missed the mark. You think of something like the Tango phones, which are pretty impressive, but they haven't taken off or sold in big numbers yet. So clearly this is a market that folks are chasing. And in order to make this really, really work, I think AI is going to be more important than ever before. That voice-controlled assistant, that contextual awareness is going to be super crucial. But also just finding some way to be really, really useful. And I had Google Glass. I've tried HoloLens. And it all feels like a fun tech demo, but nothing that is like, okay, when I leave my house in the morning, I'm going to need to put this on, right? So I feel like, you know, Apple understands maybe kind of culture and maybe the way people live a little bit better than some other companies, So they might have the best chance at this, but there's really a lot that they have to crack and solve here. And the Apple Watch, which I actually really like, I'm a big fan of it. It hasn't necessarily been that mainstream success that kind of speaks to that cultural understanding that Apple should have nailed more than anybody else. But I don't know. I mean, do you think Apple is gonna have that kind of insight into the way what people really need more than say Microsoft or Google?
Oh, that's a good question. Whether they have the insight into what we need, they'll convince us that it is what we need for sure. Because yeah, like we totally did not need the headphone jack. We didn't need that anymore at all.
Or AirPods, which I love. I used to use those things. Don't need those.
Yeah.
So dumb. They're good at that.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. Well, up next, we'll talk to a Slack employee who's using more than a decade worth of startup experience to teach prison inmates about entrepreneurship before their release. But first, we'd like to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust and who has your best interest in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. Don't waste your time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip waiting in line, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
Our guest today is Matt Howie, who created MetaFilter back in 1999, in case you never used it. I like to think of it as a kinder, gentler precursor to Twitter, a more interesting Twitter. Howie was a creative director at Creative Commons and is now a writer at Slack. But today we're talking about one of his volunteer projects that he recently participated in called Defy Ventures, where he used his internet and entrepreneurship experience to help serve people with criminal histories. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. It's great. It's been a while since we talked. We talked back when I did a parenting podcast, back when we both had very small children long ago.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Defy Ventures and how you heard about it.
Sure. Yeah. I guess I heard about it on Twitter from Rick Clow's, he's at Google Ventures. Is an investor there, and he was going on and on about this for over a course of a few months, and I was kind of like, that sounds like a cool thing I should do one day. He was always asking for volunteers. I read about the company and the volunteer organization, and they had some really impressive numbers, like their employment rate post prison was very, very high, like 95%. Their relapse rate was like 3% of their graduates head back to prison. And in reality, that's like 50 to 70% is normal. So I could tell they're doing good work. My employer gave us a couple days off this year to do volunteer work. So when I heard him say, hey, we're going to do a trip in March, I said, sign me up and I'll go for it.
Matt, I wonder, with entrepreneurship, there is kind of this idea that a lot of folks succeed after trying and trying again multiple times. You have a ton of experience at this, but was there anything that maybe working with these folks taught you, maybe some new perspectives that you got?
Well, I mean, they're in a really hard position. Like, entrepreneurship is hard as it is, but, it's going to be hard for them to get loans, hard for them to, almost impossible to get a job, if you have to list felonies and stuff. So, their angle on entrepreneurship is coming at more out of necessity. Like, they actually have a fund of zero to, I think, 20 or 30,000 for the best ideas. And they will fund the best ideas that allow them to hire other people from the program as well. So a lot of these things for them, it's very high stakes. I guess Yeah, I guess what I learned from that day was, I mean, a lot of it was just, you know, learning about the basic humanity of, and getting like an idea of what the number of prisoners in America really means. But seeing those guys, it was just really great. It was just like the ultimate kind of like hustle, you know, that you see in entrepreneurs, that they definitely had as well. But for them, it was kind of life and death. I mean, compared to the kind of stuff I do.
So yeah, speaking of hustle, you talked, one of the things in the project they say is transform the hustle. So the idea is that you might be able to use some of the skills that you might have honed in a criminal venture of the past to use to create your own project that is non-criminal. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, at first I didn't understand that. I thought it was more like the idea of hustle and like the whole like do anything, whatever it takes to do something. But it was during one of the pitches that one of the pitches we heard was a construction pitch. And the guy just broke away from like, well, here's what I want to build. Here's what I want to price it for. Here's the market I'm going for. But also, like, consider my experience. Like, I ran a drug corner. I had two employees. I bought this much drugs every day. I sold this much. I was way into, like, being very selective with my product. And everything he said, if you just popped in the word, like, construction materials in for whatever he was talking about, made perfect sense. It was like, oh, my God, he's a really great businessman. Like, he knows how to run a small team and make sure, like, the work is very good and you keep your customers happy. Like, these are all basic business things that take people years to learn. And he definitely had it and made that like connection super real for me.
Sort of like move fast and break things.
Were there, I mean, obviously you can't give away some ideas for people who are starting something if it's maybe a little too secret or too awesome, but were there some ideas that really kind of stood out? I mean, oftentimes, you know, we see a flood and a trend of tech companies all kind of trying to tackle the same problem or issue. But there are lots of great societal problems that maybe tech could address that go unaddressed. Are there any maybe unique perspectives or ideas that came from this group that you're not seeing anywhere else in tech?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't strictly a tech idea sort of place. So a lot of things were just more basic. So most of the ideas people pitched were things that were like, you know, there's a lot of construction-based jobs. There was a lot of like selling and reselling stuff, like basically buying junk cheap and then, you know, fixing it up a little and selling it. Like, these are super basic things. One guy had like a very ambitious medical startup idea that was like probably beyond, you know, he needed to know programming and security and data warehousing and the medical law structure. But he just wanted small town doctors to give you the same experience you get at like a big university hospital or in a big HMO, which is exactly the problem I have. And I was kind of amazed that a guy inside for 5 or 10 years, like, understood the same. Like, I go to a university hospital for some of my meds and stuff and procedures, and I can pull up any blood test I've taken since like the mid 2000s. While my small town doctor has nothing like that. Like, I have to call them on a phone to get, you know, any sort of results. And so, yeah, like, there wasn't really the one cool tech idea was a guy had a role-playing game. Nation was his like website. He had a website, social network idea, all about role-playing games and LARPing as well, which I think is hilarious and really weird, and it's hard to find like the person in your city that also wants to like beat each other with foam swords in a park. And I was like, God, if that doesn't exist, it should, you know, to have like a LARPing meetup site.
Right. I mean, I think in San Francisco, it's probably not that hard to find LARPers,
yeah,
but even
easier.
Actually in Petaluma, but yeah, to have an app to find LARPers, that's awesome. So it seems like this whole project is organized in a really interesting way. There's one of the things you write about in your piece on Medium is a walk the line where I guess all the volunteers stood on one side and all the entrepreneurs in training stood on the other side. And then, you know, you ask like, you know, things you had in common, like maybe childhood abuse, or one thing that was, have you ever driven a car while you were drunk? Which, you know, you can realize that some of these things that we think, oh, I'm so different than someone in prison, but you might not be so different. Do you think that you learned things about the way the project worked that you could take back to, you know, the internet company that you work for, or to that other people can learn from just in our daily lives, where we're trying to connect with people who, like, really connect with people who are different than we are?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely gave us like a idea of like how close we were instead of how different we were. You know, there were a lot of shared experiences that were terrible and good. You know, there was like, have you graduated high school? And like, you know, 75% of the prisoners did not. And like two or three of the volunteers did. One of them works at Google. And he just said, you know, he's going through a rough patch and, you know, his company was bought by Google. And these days it would be possible for him to get a job there, but probably difficult. But really it was like, it was mostly teaching us to see these prisoners as people with great ideas who really we aren't much different than. I mean, one of the ones that got everybody to the line was like, have you ever done something illegal but weren't caught? And I mean, you know, people probably do three or four things a day, you know, that break some law without even knowing it. Or, you know, when I was a kid, I did a lot of stupid stuff. You know, I had no empathy for anybody else. I was just a terrible 15-year-old boy. And I'd been chased by cops and I threw eggs at cars because I was just completely bored. And like, you know, I never got caught. I lucked out. And that was like super clear in the things we were talking about in that exercise.
Awesome. Well, it really sounds like a fulfilling experience. How else can people get involved if they're listening to this and might want to take part themselves?
Yeah, I think it's defyventures.org. And I think there's a volunteer.defyventures.org where they line up trips. Right now, I think they do these prison trips in the Bay Area and in New York City. And I think they're adding them in Nebraska. They're in 26 prisons right now doing this 6-month program. And they're trying to spread to all. I mean, their goal is every prison in America should have this. And they have really good results. So it's mostly like the wardens and stuff. The prisons really want them to come do this. It's just they need the money to fund all the education, the teaching and everything. So a lot of it is fundraising and stuff too is a part of this. So, I mean, them going after like well-to-do Silicon Valley types is really smart because everyone's got all this entrepreneurship experience and also, you know, has a lot of money to give to organizations. So it works out pretty well for them. But yeah, I would check out defyventures.org.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. Matt Howie writes for Slack. He is on Medium at 15 minutes in the morning, writing some really interesting pieces, whether you're a developer or just interested in geeky stuff. Check it out. Where else is the best place for people to find you?
Probably on Twitter is Matt Howie.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
Great. Well, Matt, we got a little bit of feedback here.
From another Matt.
From another Matt. from a viewer, Matt. And Matt writes about our discussion last week about Google hiring 10,000 humans to train algorithms to snuff out demonstrably inaccurate information. He says, how will this algorithm training work with satire websites such as The Onion or websites that display parody videos? Will they be classified as fake news? Which is a really, really great question because clearly there is a difference between something like The Onion where or Clickhole, which is like their BuzzFeed equivalent, versus maybe like a genuine propaganda website that is putting out fake things. It's a really great question, and it kind of ties into these ongoing discussions that we've been having a lot of episodes recently. What do you think?
I think that satire is getting harder and harder to do on social media. And that makes me sad because I just think it's been around forever. Yeah. And it's, you know, part of our, you know, literary past. And so now, you know, I'm thinking in particular, there was a post that was a fake Facebook post. It was when Mark Zuckerberg was traveling around, you know, and he said he's going to spend the year talking to people. And there was a picture that he actually posted on Facebook of him standing like next to an old newspaper, like somewhere in Alabama or something, an old newspaper office. And then, you know, somebody wrote a fake post that was hilarious. And it was all about how he made this old newspaper man like eat the sports page or something. And it was all these people were like, oh, is that real? Did Mark Zuckerberg really make an old newspaper man eat his sports page? I'm like, well, not literally or not actually, but sort of, you know?
Yeah,
and so it's like, it's hard because I think that, I mean, we live in such a crazy time that, but in terms of Clickhole or The Onion, I think the algorithms are already smarter. I think Facebook algorithms and Google algorithms know what that is, but not, you know, it's not always. And again, like, so it needs to be human plus algorithm, I think.
Yeah, that mixture is going to be, you know, crucially important as you know, more and more of this stuff sorts of, you know, makes its way onto the internet. I mean, one of the great things that I love about the internet is just that the same tools that we have, you know, whether it's live streaming a show like this or journalists writing news stories or publishing things online are basically available for free to anyone. You know, if you have access to a computer, you can publish and write stories. You can print photos. You can host a video cast. You can do all of these things and get out your own message. You don't need to just be like a rich guy who owned a printing press or has access to broadcast ways, right? So there's something kind of wonderfully leveling that playing field. And satire is really one of those things that historically, like you mentioned, it's part of our literary past, but it helps us cope. It helps us make sense of things. And you know, it's, if you're not able to laugh at yourself or maybe the world around you sometimes, it can be a pretty dark place. So it's an interesting question. It's obviously one that's going to be wrestled with more and more as time goes on. But I think a mixture of people and technology is really the answer here. Relying too much on algorithms might leave some things out, some human sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, our next news item here, Stephen Hawking is headed into space someday, maybe. On the TV show Good Morning Britain, Professor Hawking said that Richard Branson has invited him to fly into space aboard a Virgin Galactic trip. But while he immediately said yes, the company has yet to actually have one of those publicly boarded flights out into the outer space. The cosmetologist and physicist said that it's been a long time dream of his to go into space and experience weightlessness. And he actually didn't think anyone would ever take him, which kind of hurt to hear a little bit. It kind of broke my heart. But, you know, I got to wonder if Stephen Hawking, I'm excited for him, but I'm wondering if maybe he should shop around a little bit. I mean, like SpaceX is trying to pull us off. Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin is trying to get out there. I wonder who the first one's going to be. I mean, like, it's great that Richard Branson extended that invitation, but I'm like, hey, Richard, like, yeah, you know, if you make it up, but I'm also going to call Jeff and Elon, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you said shop around. It made me think, like, oh, is Branson making him Stephen Hawking pay? Like, I hope not. I hope the invitation is not just like you and you get invited to someone in somewhere and it's, by the way, and it's going to cost $200. So he better get to go free, Richard Branson. But yeah, you're right. Like, I think that everybody should invite him on their first trip because he's amazing. And they should also invite us.
Yeah. You know, I think I'd be down for that.
Okay. Maybe
they could take like one or two trips first, and then I'll get on that third or fourth trip. Okay. I don't know if I need to be on that day one trip.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of these companies have kind of failed miserably,
right,
exploded some rockets and things like that. So maybe a little show and prove.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd be down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just started this new job too. Like,
yeah.
You know, just,
oh, there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm real busy right now, Richard.
Right.
So yeah, hit me up in like 2022.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Well, tomorrow's guest is going to be Jacob Kastronakis from The Verge, and he's going to talk about Netflix and net neutrality.
Looking forward to that. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern at twit.tv/live. You can watch. You can also be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv, or you can leave a short voicemail. Make it short. We love to play voicemails. Also, you could leave us a video, too. The voicemails go to 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can post a link to a YouTube video at Tech News Today TV.
All right. Find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm online at NateOG.
And I am at Megan Maroney. Thanks to our technical director and editor, Brian. Thank you to Burke for helping out in the studio and for all your interesting notes about rats, etc. And thanks to you for hanging out with us today. We'll see you tomorrow. Did we high five? Did you high five with Jason?
We gotta do that. It's not over unless we high five.
Angela Merkel or something. We gotta do that. Did we do the handshake? Did we do it?